with life in general, and certainly this time of year when we are led to think more about the birth of Christ, I think there's something that Giles brought out in there that's really it's the crux of life, and sometimes we tend to forget it, and because we tend to forget it, we don't really understand how much effect we do have on people's lives. If you have your Bibles, turn over to Revelation chapter 14, and I'll give you time to get there. Revelation 14, I'm going to talk about verse 12. What I'm really going to be talking about is the effect that we have on other people's lives as Christ leads us. I think we shortchange the Lord because we shortchange His ability to work through us. And I think, quite frankly, most parents, and I certainly include myself, don't realize the effect they have on their children. Some may. I'm not saying that not everyone doesn't, but most people don't realize, and they get very discouraged. And they say, well, I've done what I should do, and yet my children aren't doing what they're supposed to do. Let's take a look at Revelation 14 and 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. The word patience is endurance. It means to endure to the end. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Child mentioned a four-year-old boy in his devotional who just wrote down on a piece of paper, I love you too. And he described to you how the mother had talked to the child and asked him if he had heard his grandfather. And in a way, he said, all the time. Not audibly, but in memory. This time of year used to be a very depressing time of year for me when I was younger, because I really hadn't come to understand and apply the truth that Giles was talking about to my own thinking in my own life. You know, our lives set an example for other people. And as Giles indicated, there's lots of things we can't do. But one thing we can do, we can endure. We can endure and make an effort to keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus and to remain true to the end. We can do that. What advantage does it have? Well, I'm sorry that I drag out my grandparents so much, but we're human beings, and our relationship between one another is based on a human relationship. My grandparents were most interesting people. I'm sure they never thought that they were having any influence on that little boy that sat on the porch with them. I'm sure it never dawned on them what they were doing. I'm sure that they never thought that the tremendous impact it would have on me. My grandfather never took me hunting. He never took me fishing. He never taught me anything about fishing or hunting. I had to teach myself. But my grandfather did something that I wish all fathers would do. Now, I'm for a father teaching his son how to hunt and how to fish and spending time with him, and I'm for a good parental relationship with the children, and I'm all for, you know, being a father to your children here in this world. But a lot of times, we're prizing our efforts on that and shortchanging the rest. Look at verse 13. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them. I know this is pertaining primarily to the fact that those who endure, particularly in this stressful time and tribulation here in the book of Revelation, that one day their works do follow them and they will be rewarded from it. And I do think that's what that means, and it is talking about a rest from their labors. But I also think it implies a lot more. I think it means that their labors stay here. Now, my grandfather was not a outgoing, loudmouth extrovert like myself. I had to convert myself to what I am so I could do what I'm doing. Basically, I'm a loner. I like to be alone. And I like to be off to myself. And I've had to force myself to do what I'm doing. I had to adapt this personality for what God had called me to. But my grandfather was a very quiet man. He never said much. But he wasn't an austere man. He wasn't hard, he wasn't cold, he wasn't cruel. But this time of year, I think about it. Like I say, this time of year, I used to get very depressed because Christmas would come around and Granddad had gone on to be with the Lord. And Theo Zella Bray McElmurray, my grandmother, his wife, had gone on to be with the Lord. And they weren't here anymore. Then my father and mother died, and they weren't here anymore. Then all the relatives and friends that I had grown up with and celebrated Christmas with over the years, they're gone. So this time of year, I tend to get a little bit depressed, but not anymore. Because, quite frankly, you have more impact on the lives of your children than you realize. And their works do follow them. Well, I'm sure Papa Mac and Theo saw me turn to the ways of the world. I'm sure they saw me struggling like every other human being. And I didn't have a whole lot of time to go and see them and visit them. Because I was trying to succeed in the world. I was trying to be something, to amount to something by worldly standards. And I'm sure they were rather disappointed. But what they didn't know was that when they died, that's when the greatest impact was made on my life. Because suddenly I realized that these two people who never finished school were people that had kept the commandments of God, and they were people who had made an impression on my life, and they had kept the faith of Jesus to the end. Papa Mac was a very kind-hearted man. He didn't have a lot of business sense because he was so kind-hearted. He owned a grocery store during the Depression when people were really going hungry. He gave credit to people, and he gave it knowing they'd never pay it back. But he made a distinct impression on my life. They raised me in the admonition of the Lord. And it was in every way. I'll never forget there was a man named Metcalf. Everybody called him Peck. So I'd call him Mr. Metcalf. But Mr. Metcalf said, no, Tom Mack. He said, I want you to call me Peck. He said, everybody calls me Peck. Well, I called him Peck on the front porch one day, and Papa Mac was there. After Mr. Metcalf left, he got all over me. He said, I don't care what Mr. Metcalf said, you call him Mr. Metcalf. They raised me, they loved me, they cared for me. When I came back to Batesville, I was involved in an operation in the National Security Agency when my grandfather died, and I couldn't be at the funeral, so I went back afterwards. As I stood by that grave, and that's what Giles' devotional reminded me of, my grandfather spoke to me. Oh, not audibly. There wasn't even a small, still voice. But I realized that here was a man who his life had amounted to something. He never became important in life. He ran for alderman one year. He lost by one vote. And after it was over, Grandmother McElmurray admitted she had voted against him. So he lost by one vote. But the impact he had on people's lives was fantastic. He was always the same. He was consistent. I wish I could be consistent. I'm very inconsistent. I don't know which side of the family that comes from, but he was a very consistent man. He was always the same. You could always count on the same justice. You could always count on the same standards. And he loved God. Now, when all this was going on and I was watching him, it didn't make much of an impression, because he would walk all the way over to Batesville, and he was a deacon in the church at Zion and a Missionary Baptist church there. He had called Brother Bogard and asked them to start a mission work there in the city of Batesville, and they did, and they struggled for a long time, but finally the church was organized. And he would walk all the way over there, and he would work. He would work every day on that building. And he was an old man then. He was in his 70s. And yet he would go over and he would work. He was a good carpenter. He grew up in a rough-cut age and era. He knew how to do everything a man needed to do to survive. But the important thing, I didn't notice it at the time, it didn't register with me. He never complained. He never complained because other people didn't show up to work. He never complained because he was the one that had to do most of the work. He never said anything unkind about another church member. I find that absolutely amazing, because I've been here 25 years and I've said some unkind things about some of you, just like you have about me. Oh, I don't mean I have an epidemic of it. But he was a man who seemed to be set on trying to live the way God wanted. My grandmother was a very simple woman. She had the simplest childlike faith I've ever seen in my life. She just simply trusted Jesus for everything. If there ever was any doubt in her mind, I never saw it. She just went about day by day believing everything was going to be all right. And she raised me. I guess that was the one thing that, in private, she wanted me to call her Theo. Well, I don't like for kids to call their grandparents by their first name, but she insisted. Now, I never called her that in front of Granddad. But she raised me to a large extent, and they had a tremendous influence on my life. So as I stood there at that grave, it just tore my heart apart. I had everything I wanted. I had succeeded. I had a whole bunch of people working for me. I didn't have anybody over me, really. And I just told people what to do, and I did it myself, and I had everything a man could want. I had a wonderful wife. At that time, I had 6 children. I was in hog heaven. And suddenly, I realized that my life had been wasted. God had given me a good wife. He'd given me wonderful children. He'd elevated me and allowed me to go to a position where I didn't have any people that were bothering me, and I just was the person who told people what to do. It was a perfect situation. But there I was, and I was absolutely stunned at that gravesite. It wasn't long after that that the Lord called me to preach. But I'll always believe until the day I die that God used those grandparents to influence my life. They were not spectacular people. They were very loving country people. But they were genuine. They were honest. And they always told the truth. I wish I could say that about myself. I wish I could say that I always told the truth. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, you're our pastor. Oh, I stretch the truth sometimes to my advantage. You say, well, I never do that. Oh, you're deceiving yourself. We all stretch the truth sometimes to our advantage. And we call it stretching the truth when really it's a deception. And that's what Giles was talking about this morning in government. Look, I'll tell you, for the first time in my life, looking at our national government, I am absolutely disgusted. It's a perfect example of what happens when you won't tell the truth. And now all the mutt and snire and venom's coming out in Washington. Let me tell you why. It's because the generation that followed my grandparents didn't have the same attitude and didn't have the same relationship with God that they had. They weren't raised in the admonition of the Lord. And in the generation that followed, it was a generation of great prosperity. You know what this prosperity has done for us? It's taught us that if we'll give our kids everything, if we'll make their life easy, if we'll make their life happy and enjoyable, that somehow out of this, everything is going to be all right. Well, I'm not telling you you shouldn't make your kids' life enjoyable and you shouldn't give them things. But I'm telling you, the one thing you can give them that amounts to something is your life. And you can't give them your life unless you give it to Jesus. Now, I know sometimes when we come down here and we sit on these pews and when I stand up here, I didn't fall off a turnip truck coming into town. My heart bleeds for my children. I want them all so much to be faithful. My heart is literally bleeding constantly. I know your hearts bleed too. I know you look at your children and your grandchildren and you wish that they would be doing this and doing that. Well, I've got some good news for you. They're watching you. It may seem to you that they're not watching you, and it may seem to you that they're cold and hard and indifferent, and it may seem to you that you're just an insignificant speck in their lives and they're totally, absolutely ignoring you and everything you're doing is wasted. No, it's not. Because your life will probably have a greater impact on you, on them, when you die than it did when you were alive. So what was it that was so spectacular that these two grandparents of mine did? They tried to keep the commandments of God. They tried to keep the faith of Jesus. Oh, they had a lot of beliefs that I don't particularly agree with now about women only wearing dresses and things like that. But what they believed God said, they stuck to it. And they believed it. And they were a witness to me. And who knows? I may end up before the judgment seat of Christ and find out they weren't wrong after all. So there's lots of things in our lives that have a tremendous impact on those around us. But I'd also like to tell you that it has a tremendous influence on the people that make up the local visible body of Christ. There is no substitute for a local visible body of Christ. It's meant to be an intimate group of men and women who have a common goal and a common cause. It says, "Yea, saith the Spirit." Right, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works do follow. I've had a lot of people that have had a lot of influence on my life. The man who used to sit there by where Alan's sitting, Ernest Hud George, he had a lot of influence on my life. I saw a faith in him that I didn't see in a lot of people. When I came here, the pay was $60 a week. They figured there were 4 weeks in every month, so they multiplied 4 times 6 and made it $240 a month. Why? Because they had a hard time making that sometimes. And Tud was a man who had a simplistic, childlike faith and a very loving nature. You know, whenever things happen in my life and I start to think about getting discouraged, I think about Tud. Tud was always the same. Now, I'm sure you may have seen him lose his temper. I never did. But Tud was always the same. He was consistent. He wasn't spectacular at all. He wore coveralls to church, and I rejoiced in that because he was always presentable. He always looked great, and I'll never forget the time that he wore his false teeth to church. Sister George had begged him and begged him. He came in here with those false teeth, and I was preaching, and he smiled, and I started laughing, and I couldn't stop because it just wasn't Tud George. But all these people had an impact. In O.D., I remember a lot of visits out to the trailer. I remember the sign they had on the wall when it said, "Sir, we're going to serve God anyhow, in spite of what happened." I'll never forget the time that we had the contest of the cake. And I hurt O.D.'s feelings. I didn't mean to, but I'll never forget it. His cake sunk down in the middle. It looked like a grave. And to tell you that, well, it looked like a grave, and I shouldn't have said that. But what I didn't tell the church was, Tommy and I made our cake, and we won the prize. But we had Imogene standing there while we were doing it, saying, "Do this and do that." I know. But I see I'm being truthful. So there have been a lot of people. And Sadie, old Sadie Sims, remember her? She sat down here. She was a Pentecostal. And I mean a flaming Pentecostal. She came into this town, and I got a call from her daughter, and she said, "My mother has been down here to the Assembly of God Church, and she's been to the Pentecostal Church, and she said she won't go down there. She said, I want to ask you a question." I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Do you all believe in speaking in tongues?" I said, "No, ma'am." I said, "I believe that's vanished away." She said, "Well, great. Let me talk to my mother." So the mother got me on the phone, started talking to me. And the reason she wouldn't go to those churches because they believe in speaking in tongues. I said, "Well, come on down here." She came on down. She sat here. She was in her 70s. She was 72, I believe. And she got saved. Or she may have been saved before. I don't know. But anyway, after she got saved here or before, we baptized her. She was a big woman. And I got the church to authorize 4 guys to help me baptize her. And we baptized her. She had the most beautiful voice you've ever heard. And so she'd go to the nursing home and sing with me. She died not too long ago at a nursing home up in Iowa. A lot of memories. She had a tremendous effect on me. What kind of effect? Well, I don't give up. I don't say, well, that person's too far gone, because you never know. Let me tell you what I've learned about consistency. The Spirit of God does the work, all of it. I just get up every morning, try to do what I think God wants me to do that day, and go to bed that night, and leave all the rest of it up to God. That's what I learned from my grandparents. They never were spectacular, but they were always there in church. And they were always trying to worship God in the way that He directed. Remember my sister Swope? She was set down here, and I remember we first started caring a long time ago, and it used to be a long, hard route. And man, you talk about an unpopular preacher. I would catch it every year after the caroling was over. Oh, you sang too long, went too many places. I never heard such griping in my life. I just kind of gritted my teeth and went on, but that meant a lot to those old people. We'd drive over in Russellville, and we'd sing at Sister Swope's, and we'd drive around different places. We'd go out to the Georges, and they'd stand out on the porch. That meant a lot to them. And now, a lot of them are gone. But the impact they had is still here. I'm still aware of where they sit. I'm still aware of their lives. And they're an encouragement to me. They live on. They live on because Christ's Spirit lives in us, and He reminds us about them. And that's really what life's all about. Now, the reason I don't get depressed anymore is because I'm going to see Manda, Athelia, Ozella, Bray, McElmurray. I'm going to see Papa Mac. I'm going to see my mom and my dad and all those that have gone on before me. It may seem to you sometime that I overemphasize this holy city and that I spend too much time preaching on it, that I might be better qualified, or it might be better for me to not be so concentrated on it. That's heaven. That's the final age. And I want all of us in this church, when the Lord comes for us, whether or not it's when we're dying. I mean, some of you may die this week. I may die this week. That's the same thing as a rapture, the Lord coming for you. I'd like to know in my heart that you were faithful. Don't tell me it's not any of my business. When you became a member of this church, it became my business. Because my business is your business. I don't mean I'm going to stick my nose in and try to find out everything you're doing. I don't do that at all. But God called me here to pastor this church. God put me here for that purpose. Every man's got to play, and I don't mean to put something religious in here that sounds derogatory, but every man's got to play the hand he's dealt. God dealt me this hand. I'm your pastor. I love you. I hope there's nothing that you can't talk to me about. Now, we may disagree. Some of the things that we have to say to one another we may not see eye to eye on anything. But I think there is one thing that I hope my personality hasn't made you think otherwise. I do love you and I do care for you. I'd have to. I've had so many people that loved me and cared for me and watched over me that never realized what an impact they had on my life. I think sometimes if some of these young people that come in here, what few we do have, but most of them you don't see there in the back. But if you just take a little time, go by and ask them how they're doing. Talk to them about how school was. Take some time with them. That has a tremendous influence on young people. I know. Because when I grew up in our churches, they were fighting, snarly, arguing, business meeting. The only thing I liked about it as a kid was because it was the most exciting time of the month. They got into wild arguments about everything. But there'd be some little old sweet lady there, and I remember them, and they'd say, Tom Mack, look what I brought you. And they'd bring me some cookies. And they'd say, don't tell your grandmother. And I'd slip those cookies back there and eat them. And there'd be some old man who'd come by and pat me on the back, sit down, might sit down beside me, ask me if I'd been fishing this week. Took an interest in me, took time with me. I tell you what the problem in our churches today is. Sometimes you probably think I'm anti-program and I'm against all that and I'm mean and snarly. I'm not that way at all. I just happen to know what works. It's the whole church's responsibility. Churches hire a youth director. They hire someone to work with the children. That's okay. I have nothing against that. I really don't. And I'm supposed to tell you the truth, and I am. I don't have anything against it. But let me tell you something that works a lot better. When each individual church member, and a pastor included, will take some time with these kids. I do the best I know how. I like Aaron. I call him Batman. And the different kids, you know, I try to take time with them. I try to let them know I care about them and I'm interested in them. But that's what every one of you all ought to do. I don't claim I'm a perfect example of it, but it's not just the pastor's responsibility. Russell turned out pretty good, didn't he? You know why? His parents took an interest in him. His parents took an interest in him. Not just an entrance to, not just to teach him to hunt and fish. That was all done. His granddad did most of that. But there isn't any doubt in Russell's mind that his parents love the Lord because they're always here. That counts for a lot. Your life means more than you realize. And it has more of an impact than you'll ever imagine. I'm standing up here preaching and teaching, and it's by the call of God and the Holy Spirit of God. He's responsible. I have to say that with 100% efficiency. But he used a lot of people along the way. He used my grandfather, my grandmother. He used my mother. My mother was a woman who was baptized by immersion. She was saved in a community church. They didn't have a Baptist church, any kind of. They had one church in town at Gregory. And she was baptized by immersion because it just depended on which preacher came through. There was a Methodist preacher came through. She was saved. They used to preach the gospel very heavily. They used to preach blood redemption. They don't do a whole lot anymore. But she was saved, genuinely. And when he wanted to sprinkle her, she said, no, that's not the right way. That's not what the Bible teaches. So he took her down to a creek and they baptized her in the creek. My mother had a good heart. I didn't find out about it until years later. But she would always go and take food to a bunch of poor people that lived underneath the bridge. I didn't know it until years afterwards when I was a grown man. I didn't know that. But she was always doing things like that, and I never knew it. I found out inadvertently. She had a very good heart. She loved people. She loved myself and my brother very much. I tell you, a lot of people, when they lose their parents, it's a terrible, horrifying shock. It should only be a terrifying, horrible shock if you don't know where they went, or if in your mind there's a big question about whether they went to hell or heaven. So all I can say to the church here, we've got some time left ahead of us. I don't know how much more time. But let's make sure that each one of us in our own way understands something that has to do with Giles' devotional. Let's be truthful with one another. Now, I'm not telling you that you have to tell the pure, straightforward, unblemished truth. There's such a thing called tact. And tact is not something that's wrong. And it's not God. Don't be so blunt that you hurt people's feelings. But be honest when you deal with people. I think that's extremely important. If I haven't learned that in 25 years I've been here, why, I guess I never will learn it. But truth has a lot to do with it. And I really appreciate Giles' devotional. We've just had some outstanding devotionals in this church, and I thank God for the ones who gave them. Brent gave me an example that's going to be taken all over this country about the gift and looking inside the box. And now I'll use Giles's. I'll tell the story of the four-year-old boy, and then I'll throw in just about what I've been talking to you. A church is not to be a group, a local visible body of people that are disorganized in purpose. I'm the pastor, but the Bible clearly tells me I'm not supposed to lord it over you. It is supposed to be a position through which the pastor leads by the truth. And he's supposed to be an example to the flock, and he's supposed to be as non-partial as possible. That's difficult, but I do love you. And I do try to feel you out. And if I feel like you want to be left alone, I leave you alone. I feel like if you want me around, I'll be around. But I try to become all things to all men that I might by all means win some. So I guess the crux of everything I've said so far is, we're facing another year. We're facing another year together. Let's work together. Let's stick together. Let's realize that our lives lived in faithfulness in this church, which is one of the Lord's churches, is what this is all about. When people come in here and they're visiting us, let's take the time to be friendly. Let's take the time to go over and introduce ourselves. You can do that. I'm not asking to go over and have a long conversation with them, but just introduce yourself. We've got people that have come here that need the truth. They're in error. And I have to confess, sometimes I go overboard on, I get carried away. Maybe I am a little too abusive at times. I'm trying to watch that. But let's be friendly to them. Let's let them see that we've got something here that's worth having, that people will want to be a part of this body. Well, it's 20 minutes till, so I'll just give you a little longer break this morning.